mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Jane Hirschfield, and she's, as you have heard, an award-winning poet. And if you want to know more about her work, first of all, you could go to Wikipedia. It has a wonderful entry for Jane Hirschfield. But if you want to know about her presentations, she herself doesn't maintain a website, but her agent does. And so you can go to barclayagency.com/speakers/Jane-Hirschfield. So you could go there, and they keep track of her many presentations. So that would be up to date, or go to the Wikipedia page to find out more about her. And Jane, what I would love to talk about right now has to do with so many of my friends are writing poetry. I mean, I'm amazed. Amrita, my circle sister, is a spiritual practice. She's been writing a poem a day for over 365 days. I mean, she's well into their next year. And my sister, she's confined to a bed in a long-term rehab place. And so physically, she's confined. But emotionally, she writes poetry, and she is in a huge space of expansiveness and living in this wonderful imaginal world that's way beyond her bedside. And my chorus leader, Benjamin Mertz, he's biracial, and for the first time, he went to Africa. And when people asked him about his trip, he has no words. He can't say what that trip was about, except that he wrote 30 pages of poetry. That's the only way that he had of conveying the depth of feeling that he got from putting his feet on that soil. And so I would love for you to say anything about this. I think it's an explosion of poetry right now, that people are realizing that it is such a wonderful way to express themselves. They can't help themselves but do it. Are you running across that at all in your presentations?
Well, you know, I have always felt this to be the case. One of my lifelong theories is that every single person writes three great poems over the course of their life. It's just that if they don't ordinarily swim in the waters of poetry, they may not know they've done it. All they know is they wrote something. But every once in a while, you know, for my entire life, because I'm the poet, my friends know, something will happen and someone will write something and they will show it to me. And I will just look at it and say, this is spectacular. Do you have any idea what you've done? So, you know, is it new? Is it a change? Or have people always been doing it and our awareness of it? I think it is true that the more dire the times, the more poetry is needed. You know, there is the famous short poem by Bertolt Brecht called Motto, you know, in the dark times, will there be singing? Yes. There will be singing of the dark times. This is what poetry exists to serve. It exists to serve us when we are otherwise unable to hold the great paradoxical and enormously powerful currents of our lives in any other language. It exists to assist us through transition moments, through deaths, through falling in love and weddings, through births, through the cataclysm of the current moment. And so, Yes, as more and more people become aware of the fact that we are living inside a cataclysm, it makes perfect sense that more and more people are finding their way to poems, but poems have always been there to find your way toward. If they did not belong to every human being through all time, past, present, and future, what would they be? It's like laughing or singing. Or, when we're young and still able to, turning a cartwheel because the day is beautiful. This is what human beings do. This is how we hold our lives and allow our lives to hold us and to pass through us. And one of those vocabularies of being is the making of language that is more intense, less constrained, freer. You used the word imaginal earlier, that has more of both image and music and the freedom to break all the rules and the way the heart can speak in its most private corner, which is nonetheless available to any other human being who is given access to those words.
Oh, beautifully said, beautifully said. And going back to the idea we were talking about earlier about despair, you often combine your poetry with science or your concerns about the climate and things like that that really concern us all. And I want to go back, Jane, if we could, to go back to that moment in 2017.
Ah, yes.
It was a huge march for science, and it happened in Washington, D.C. Thousands and thousands of people showed up. And I remember this date because even here in Santa Rosa, we participated in that march, and we had our march for science right here in my community. We didn't travel across the country, but we participated. And you were the one who organized Poets for Science as a component of that march. And you were able to present to that huge crowd one of your poems. And I would love for you to, number one, share that poem with us, but also help us to know what that was like for you in that moment.
Thank you. So I'll give the background. So the title of the poem is On the Fifth Day. And the fifth day it is referring to is not the one from the Bible, as people might think, but it was the fifth day of the prior administration, as I will refer to it. The fifth day that they were in place, the White House took down from its website all information having to do with climate change, and also on the same day instructed every scientist who worked directly for any federal agency to not speak about their work in public unless it was approved by the politically appointed head of the administration. So it was an act of, hubris and censorship and a declaration of, pretty much war against the future, as I felt it. But, for the last 25 years of my life, at least, many of my closest friends have been research scientists. And so I felt this deeply personally. I felt it personally on behalf of all beings, and I felt it personally on behalf of my friends. And so by the end of that day, I had written this poem. I sent it to three friends. They immediately said, can we send this to our friends? And, by 2 days later, I was getting thank yous relayed back to me from all over the country. And the same day that that happened was the day that, a group of actual scientists began to organize. The Women's March had just happened. And using that as a kind of, model, they organized the March for Science, which, like the Women's March, did happen all over the country and beyond. It happened all over the world. So the same poem that I read on the Mall in D.C. to 50,000 people, the former president of Ireland read at the end of the march in Dublin, and a 13-year-old girl read at a march in France. And a German newspaper published, and the Washington Post published. And so, you know, it was all a little staggering in terms of feeling like I had written something that was of service. So let me now read the poem. On the fifth day. On the fifth day, the scientists who studied the rivers were forbidden to speak or to study the rivers. The scientists who studied the air were told not to speak of the air, and the ones who worked for the farmers were silenced, and the ones who worked for the bees. Someone from deep in the Badlands began posting facts. The facts were told not to speak and were taken away. The facts, surprised to be taken, were silent. Now it was only the rivers that spoke of the rivers, and only the wind that spoke of its bees, while the unpausing factual buds of the fruit trees continued to move toward their fruit. The silence spoke loudly of silence, and the rivers kept speaking of rivers, of boulders, and air. Bound to gravity, earless and tongueless, the untested rivers kept speaking. Bus drivers, shelf stockers, code writers, machinists, accountants, lab techs, cellists kept speaking. They spoke the fifth day of silence. And when I read that poem to the 50,000 or so people who were amassed on the Washington Mall, and this is an experience that no poet ever expects to have in their life, the thing that really stunned me was it turned out that up front near the stage, there was a big contingent of bee people dressed in bee costumes and holding bee placards. And they started shouting and jumping up and down when I read the part about the bees. And then when I read the part about the Badlands, which actually did happen, people started tweeting facts and then they were silenced. Way back in the middle of the crowd on the left, there was this roar. And I don't know who those people were, but now I'm not used to being interrupted by cheers and shouts. You know, it almost silenced me there at the podium. I was so, you know, stunned by this. But you really do come to feel, and, you know, very unexpected for me, a person who began writing poems and hiding them under the mattress as a child. I was not a person who showed my work or trotted it out or wanted to be seen ever. You know, to write a few poems in this life which are of service to people and can step into a moment and speak into that moment and be received, it is very humbling.
And it continues to speak to this moment because we need it more than ever. Thank you so much. I'm here with Jane Hirschfeld, and her newest book is The Asking, New and Selected Poems. It has poems from many of her other books, but it also has new poems. I'm just loving it. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. I'm here with poet Jane Hirschfield, and I'm just loving being with you. It's so heartful. And I would love to have you recite the poem, because we're talking about this newest book, this newest volume called The Asking. The title of this particular volume comes from a poem itself. So I would love for you to read that poem for us, and then let's have some conversation on the other side of the reading.
Yes. So every New Year's morning, I like to start the year by writing a poem as my first act of the year. Counting New Year's morning, what powers yet remain to me? The world asks, as it asks daily, and what can you make, can you do to change my deep, broken, fractured? I count this first day of another year, what remains. I have a mountain, a kitchen, two hands, can admire with two eyes the mountain, actual recalcitrant, shuffling its pebbles, sheltering foxes and beetles, can make black-eyed peas and collards, can make from last year's late-ripening persimmons a pudding, can climb a stepladder, change the bulb in a track light. For years, I woke each day first to the mountain, then to the question. The feet of the new sufferings followed the feet of the old, and still they surprised. I brought salt, brought oil to the question, brought sweet tea, brought postcards and stamps. For years, each day, something. Stone did not become apple. War did not become peace. Yet joy still stays joy. Sequins stay sequins. Words still bespangle, bewilder. Today I woke without answer. The day answers, unpockets a thought as though from a friend. Don't despair of this falling world. Not yet. Didn't it give you the asking?
Wow. Wow, there we go. And that's where the name of this volume comes from. And that is the question that you're putting out to us about despair. And is your poetry the microcosm and the macrocosm, the small and the large, and how it's all connected? And we talked about kinship and how it's all in kinship, and how you have some poems about how every action matters. It is a contribution. And so even if it seems insurmountable, the challenges before us, we should not shy away from making that contribution to have a reply to the asking.
That's exactly right. And you know, I mean, what's described in here, you know, each day I brought, you know, salt, oil, sweet tea, postcards and stamps to the questions. I actually did that for 5 years. Every single day I took some explicit action, knowing it might be absolutely futile and you know, not count for anything. But the practice of doing something every day to try to move us all towards a more benevolent future, it changed my life, and it might help something and multiply me by 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, a million people all doing the same thing. We do begin to make a difference. I feel as if it is very important, again, going back to what we spoke about earlier, this question of, you know, how do we meet the despair which inevitably will rise up in us in the darkest moments? How do we meet it? And I think one of the answers is the sense of agency. We feel despair when we feel there's nothing we can do. And the thing about poetry as one of the technologies of antidote is you can always write a poem, as you were describing of your bedridden friend. Even if there is nothing more you can do, if you can bring one word next to another with the same newness as that dog walking down the street you were talking about, the world is awake and full of possibility again. And if you feel possibility, that will lighten despair. It will cut windows and doors in your despair and give you a way to walk back into the world with others, with what in Buddhism the 10th ox herding picture famously describes as bliss bestowing hands. You know, the other thing about poems that hold darkness, that look at darkness, that address darkness, the reason they are good poems, if they are good poems, is because no matter what they are looking at, they also hold beauty. They also hold connection. They hold the living voice and the living hand and the witness. They hold the sense of newness and possibility and potential and hope that all art of any kind in any genre holds. It says this world can be made new, and it is malleable to you yourself, putting one word next to another in a way that a spark flies out and you remember how alive you are and are so grateful for that. Our lives are so brief. Existence is so large. And look, we get to feel the entirety of it, every breath we take while we are here.
You are helping to remind us to forever be vigilant to our being called upon to witness both the beauty and the despair. I mean, but to not forget the beauty.
Yes.
Because we're being pounded by all that's wrong and that's not giving towards
right.
life. But at the same time, then we are being called to equally witness the beauty. I know your poetry is filled with that, with both and.
Very much so. And I have taken up a practice. I learned a phrase when I went and gave some readings in Australia. Apparently, an Australian exclamation of happiness is to simply say, "You beauty." And it's not necessarily addressed to a specific you, "You beauty." And I love that phrase so much that I took it as a practice every morning when I first open my eyes, whatever day it is I am meeting, to have the first thing I say to it be, "You beauty, you beauty." And I won't read the poem because I know time is short, but I'll just say, you know, so that last poem I read was one of the new poems in the book that hasn't appeared before. And another one is a poem with the title, "Each Morning Calls Us to Praise This World That Is Fleeting." And, you know, that is the same practice. And I do believe that under almost any circumstance, it is possible to find some gleam that reminds you that we can, after all, only see darkness if there is some other side visible. Pitch darkness is invisible to us. But if you can feel the pain of grief, of suffering, the fear for the future, the worry for, you know, the coming generations, the worry for, you know, the small beings in the ocean caught up in currents they did not themselves make. If you can feel that as pain, it is because you can also love them. There is no reason for abandoning the love and connection, because it is what awakens in us this great desire to care for not only all beings, all beings, also our own life, which is part of all beings' lives. You don't hate yourself either. You don't erase yourself. It is a continuous fabric. And to be kind to your beloved, your friend, your child, and yourself is continuous with being kind to strangers in the great, you know, the Abrahamic tradition and the desert tradition all over the world. If somebody comes to your door, first you feed them. First you give them a bed. Then you ask them their story. It is not about who are you? Are you good enough to take in? No, if a stranger arrives at your door, you feed them. And that ancient tradition, which is in all especially difficult environments, desert places, you know, places that are hard, you appreciate the difficulty of the journey. And you first express, we are family, we are kin. And then you say, and who are your people?
Yes, I love it. I love it. Oh, Jane, I just have so appreciated this very extraordinary and special time with you. I thank you so much for being part of the New Dimensions family.
Thank you, Justine. It has been, as it always is, a complete joy to talk with you.
The newest volume is called The Asking, New and Selected Poems. And if you want to know more about Jane, you can go to her Wikipedia page. That's a really great page to really find out all that she's accomplished. But if you want to know about her newest offerings in her talks and events, you can go to barclay.com/speakers/Jane-Hirschfield. You can also go to the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org, to find that as well. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3796.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Anton Schwartz. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the work of my father, Tony.
You're listening to